So many of us together tonight, we are privileged to have Dave Rico as our guest teacher. Dave is a longtime guest teacher for our Sangha over many years. Dave is a practicing PhD in psychology and has a private practice both here in San Francisco and in Santa Barbara, where he is right now. Normally, during non-COVID times, he spends half the year down in Santa Barbara and half here in San Francisco. He's a prolific author of more than a dozen books and teaches workshops and seminars around the country, and incorporates Jungian and Buddhist psychology into his practice. So Dave, welcome.
Thank you, Carl, and thanks all of you for inviting me. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because you are with me. And I was thinking today, that's what this is, this pandemic. I'm in the lonely valley of the shadow of death. I might not die, but I'm definitely in the shadow of it. And the promise is that there might be a companion, because the worst thing about any trauma or tragedy or fear is going through it alone. So in this 23rd Psalm, King David is happy to realize that he's not alone, that there's a kind of ally or a person or an energy that accompanies. And in our tradition of Buddhism, that is the accompaniment of the bodhisattvas. They are the ones who remain with us throughout our practice and throughout our lifetime or lifetimes. And that's my topic for today. This realization that we're not alone as we go through this. Of course, we're not alone because we have each other, and that's certainly a wonderful thing. But in addition to having one another, both in a religious perspective and in the Buddhist perspective, there are assisting forces who come along with us as we go through things. This is an ancient realization in the human psyche. And the way to tell what's deeply in us is to look at themes in stories the world over and throughout the centuries that show us a particular theme. And one theme in the story of the hero's journey or heroine's journey is that there's always someone or someones who come along and are necessary for the hero or heroine to fulfill their task. So for instance, in the Wizard of Oz, we have Dorothy as the heroine, but she can't really go through her whole story without the help of Glinda, the good witch, and the three friends. And Luke Skywalker, he needs Obi-Wan Kenobi, he needs Han Solo. And Robin Hood needs the Merry Men of Sherwood Forest. He needs Maid Marian. There's no story in which it's just one hero all by himself or herself. Even the Lone Ranger has Tonto. So something in our psyche lets us know that we can't really go through our whole story alone, not only because we're social beings, but also because none of us has the full set of powers that it would take for a successful lifetime. And just the right people come along in the course of our personal story to be our guides, mentors, companions, cheerleaders, whatever it might be. And in the Buddhist tradition, as I'm pointing out, it's the bodhisattvas. These are the enlightened Buddhas over the centuries who have vowed not to enter into nirvana until they have brought all of us with them. And so they're with us all the time. One of the most popular ones is Jizo Bodhisattva, J-I-Z-O, that's his Japanese name. And he's a patron or guide of travelers. He's also the one who goes into the Buddhist hell and rescues people. So he's accompanying us during our life and even after. And the founder of Soto Zen, which is Dogen. And I'm gonna share the screen because I wanna show you his quotation. Let's see here. Okay, tell me if you can see this. Okay, you see this quote? Carl, can you see this? Okay. Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong section. So Buddhist ancestors, out of their kindness, have opened the wide gate of compassion in order to let all sentient beings enter realization. Realization would be enlightenment. Not only bodhisattvas, but those who have preceded us in the practice, and it could be even our own family members, out of their kindness, have opened the wide gate of compassion in order to let all of us enter enlightenment. Or another way of saying it is, we're not alone in our practice. Every time we sit, the whole world is sitting with us and all the ancestors. And just to have a sense of this and to think of them as allies is a wonderful, to me, it gives me a lot of hope. Now here's something from Sharon Salzberg. She says, all beings are connected. We're all bodhisattvas because we're all helping each other. Not in the sense of being saviors running around taking care of everybody's problems, but through the truth of interconnectedness. There is no separation. We all belong to each other. Isn't that a beautiful idea? We all belong to each other. So not only do I have allies, but also I am called to be an ally. Ally of whom? Of all beings. Who are my allies? All beings. So in this time of COVID, we're getting this feeling of we're all in this together. And at the same time, health-wise, we're being advised to separate not be around each other. That's why it feels so contradictory and especially scary. So I'd like to open it up to any comments or anything you'd like to add in or ask about.
Can you unshare your screen?
Yes, I will stop the sharing.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody have any comments on this whole idea? Stephen, is that your hand up? No. Lynn?
Yeah.
Hi, Lynn.
Yeah, it reminds me of the three jewels that somebody's talked about, you know, Sangha being one of them. And I definitely feel it when meditating here, you know, with in the company of everyone else, that it's easier to meditate. It's easier for me to not get up and start making a coffee or, you know, or doing something else. So, yeah, it's the accompaniment in the Sangha is definitely welcome and helpful.
Yeah.
I agree with Lynn. It's been just so wonderful to have you all this year, over the last year, and have this weekly touch point to, you know, to deal with not feeling alone. But I love your message, Dave, about how we're never alone and that we're not only connected with everyone currently, but I'm really struck with this ancestors idea. And I feel like when I am in touch with that, which doesn't happen very often, but when I'm really, really in touch with this idea that Thich Nhat Hanh talks about every cell in your body has every one of your ancestors in your actual DNA. And when I really am in touch with that, then I have a much, you know, stronger, richer, I think, spiritual practice.
That's a very good point. So they're not only around us, but also inside us, even physically. You know, when I was doing a little research for my talk, I remembered in my childhood that we had the belief in guardian angels. And so I looked that up on Wikipedia, and I found something interesting that I had never known, that St. Thomas Aquinas, the main theologian of the Catholic view, said, every person is allotted an angel when he or she or they are born. It isn't just for Christians. Every single person has an angel. An angel, of course, is ally, you know, companion. And I thought, what a lovely concept. Of course, to me, it's a metaphor. I wouldn't take it literally. But it's just the idea that you come into the world already accompanied by a larger energy than can be accounted for by your little body. And to walk around with a belief like that is the foundation of hope. Other ideas or questions about any of this? Hi, Loki. Yes.
Hi, David. I'm glad you could start us off on the new year. I'm just going along with Lynn and Kate and Maureen that the Sangha, this is a lifeline for me, especially right now, and other things happening in my life. But this one level of this isolation, stay at home, this is such a lifeline. And when we're practicing and when we're in the silence, I can feel, I mean, when my mind settles I can feel everyone's consciousness. And I think it's okay to sing about the guardian angel or some ally or companion. Why not take it literally? It doesn't matter. It has the same effect that there are guides, there are enlightened ones who are helping us. There's our own book here, you know? So.
Yes.
I kind of take it sort of literally. It's comforting, but in a way it doesn't matter what my mind believes.
Thank you for giving us that permission, and I certainly agree. Stephen.
Yeah, thank you, Dave, and everyone who's spoken so far. I think I love that in your talk, you reminded us that we are all in this together, each of the 20 of us that are here. And then Dogen's quote about the out of our kindness. And as the Dalai Lama, when asked what his religion was, said kindness, and that's the basis of it. Out of our kindness, we invite everyone in. And so talk of justice and equality and inclusion is a spiritual practice for us. We don't have any choice. And thinking of Dogen in the Ehe Koso Hatsugamen, he also says, before the Buddhas were enlightened, they were the same as we, Buddhas and ancestors. Enlightened people of today are exactly the same as those Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and ancestors. And so as a couple of people have mentioned, it's not just that it goes this way, the kindness to include us all, but that it's from the beginning. And Dogen really teaches that, you know, we spend a lot of time thinking about ancestors and Bodhisattvas and teachers, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, in a few years or a few days, when people say, who handed you warm hand to warm hand, this philosophy, this religion of kindness, it's the people that are in here right now are the ancestors of tomorrow. So it's a beautiful way of thinking up and, you know, sideways as well as multi-generational. You know, the way he puts it in there is that we are one Buddha and one ancestor, awakening Bodhi mind. We are one Bodhi mind. It's just a beautiful way to think about the concepts that you're sharing with us. So thank you.
Yes, and that has the idea of the interconnectedness.
Yeah.
Well, I want to share one more quote. Oh, but Alan, did you have a comment first?
Yeah, and this has been, I don't usually like to be the contrarian, but it's been weighing on my mind today. I read this morning a really excellent article in the New Yorker about the San Francisco COVID experience. And we all are patting ourselves on the back about how well we've done as a community. And I've done that. And in the article, it's really clear that the pandemic in San Francisco is in the Latino community and in the African-American community, and that a lot of the efforts have gone there. But as someone with lots of privilege, you know, it's I've done my part and we had to do our part. But at the same time, you know, this disease is ravaging parts of our community that may not be represented in our sangha so well right now, or just may be that I don't necessarily see. And they talked about also in the article how great the divide is in San Francisco between, you know, the what we now call essential workers, you know, and in the beginning we thought those were the doctors, and now we're realizing, you know, everyone who's delivering, everyone who's working at the stores are essential workers. And those are the people in the brunt of this pandemic. So right now I'm not feeling like that I've held all those people, or that I actually feel disconnected with that. And I know that disconnection's a delusion, but that the article kind of, even though I knew this somehow, but this was just really stark about, yes, our success is because we've done something different, but that most people, I'll say most white people, have not a clue of really what's been going on and the work that's been done to work in those communities and to work with folks in those communities to keep their lives safe.
Well, thank you for bringing that consciousness in, Alan. I appreciate that. Okay. I consider this one of the most profound comments I've ever read in my entire life. And this is from a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. So this takes us to the inner ally that all of us carry in our hearts. And a profound transition happened among the members of AA. They realized that this inner resource that they never even had suspected was there until they found recovery, until they found humility, that turned out to be the same as what they had always thought of as God or power beyond themselves. This one sentence summarizes the entire journey that we make from believing we have nothing going inside of us to finding out that we do, and then realizing that what's inside of us is greater than the outline of our body. With few exceptions, almost everyone in the program, our members find that they have tapped into an unsuspected inner resource, which soon enough they identify with what they've always called a power greater than themselves. And I wanted to end with that quote because it rounds out our discussion and brings in the idea of the inner resource. And if anybody has a final comment, we have a couple of minutes. I would love to hear it. Lynn.
Yeah, hi. I am also a member of that 12-step program. And I had to deal with that. I finally had to come to the conclusion that it doesn't matter. I had to let go of knowing whether or not the existence of God was true or not. That, you know, they tell you to get a higher power and it doesn't matter what, you can say nature, the universe, or whatever. For a while I went with the universe because it exists. And then I had a vision of Athena coming to me. So now I pray to Athena and I am firmly convinced that there's a part of me that fits in with the spiritual thing and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether or not God exists. That's not the point. It's my yearning for that. It's that part of me that wants to be connected, you know? So, you know, we also talk about feeling connected with everything in Buddhism. And yeah, it's the same thing. It's the same little part. So are we really or are we not? I have to drop that. It's the feeling. It's the feeling that I need to have, you know? Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Lynn. Okay, anybody else have a final comment?
For me, I think it is the practice of mindfulness and the practice of the path. And I would contrast that for me with my mind trying to figure out ways for me to be happy or feel safe or solve problems. And that the resource of the Dharma path is suggesting something else, counterintuitive. to sit and to feel something different. And so for me, that's that untapped resource inside that my mind forgets is there and doesn't think is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe, because I do a lot of Tibetan work, I do believe in these bodhisattvas, and I always thought that it was not, I was praying for like to be healed or something. It wasn't that I was asking, it just helped internalize to me that I want to be healed rather than actually praying to a stone Buddha or something like that. And they've made up all these different categories to help you do different ones. Manjushri for wisdom, Vajrapani for the power, Vingtara can come and rescue you, and Chinrezig. And is that appropriate Buddhist way to hide yourself for these things?
Really fits. Thank you for putting it that way. And Stephen, did you want to mention the chat you just sent?
It's just a little, taking what you said and then thinking about what Len said in terms of higher power and in recovery, it simply means not me. It means something bigger, so that the group of us, the Sangha, is indeed can be higher power. And that's just a little meditation that I recite every morning when I wake up, that just says higher power is right here. And as long as I remember that, then I have the strength to go through the day. So I just offered it for everyone. But thanks.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Dave.
My pleasure.
And so why don't we all sit together for a minute or two as we close with some metta. So let's sit.